Okay. As I said, my name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here at the Triangle Club. And we're technically on step 9. And I'm a member of the Carl Gables group. We'll see how that works out. You know, it's... Stop making fun of me. I think it's ridiculous to plan these. You know, I really do very little planning on this stuff. Not that you guys don't realize that. But I do a little bit, you know, but I don't see what the point is, because then after I plan and I earmark pages and I sit down in the chair and I think of something and I forget everything I plan to say and I just go with whatever's on my heart. I do want to say, for those of you who really want to get a little bit deeper into this thing, that I want to give you some suggestions, some reading suggestions. Number one, I really suggest you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. It's an incredible book, and it really outlines the program of recovery as it was in the first 4 years, from 1935 to 1939, as it really was. And actually, it goes farther than 1939, because the program itself, for various people, went much farther. And that program, by the way, that particular program, the program they practiced in the first 4 years, is alive and well in Alcoholics Anonymous. You have to search for it, but it's actually there. There are people working that deal. You may want to you may want to also read an incredible article. For those of you who are on my emailing list, you already got this article, whether you chose to read it or not. It's called Gresham's Law in Alcoholics Anonymous. Gresham's Law, that bad currency drives out good, has been operative in the life of Alcoholics Anonymous. Weak AA is tending to drive out strong AA. This article was originally appeared in July 1976 by Tom Powers, who was a GSO in the 50s. So it's an incredible article. It talks about the three types of Alcoholics Anonymous program that's prevalent today. It's prevalent back then, it was prevalent today. You might read that and identify or notice some things about it. It's a very interesting article to read. Gives you some idea of what's actually going on in Well People's Anonymous here. So, in any event, so it is good to be here, and I am going to, I'm always torn between, you know, do I actually talk about the step, do I talk about what's on my heart, but talk about stuff that's going on. I haven't found it necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. I've been around for a while, and I'm one of these people that believes that time actually means something. Not that my sponsor's got 57 years, I know people with 60 years. I mean, there is something about maturing in Alcoholics Anonymous. I might get into that a little bit as far as this program, in my mind, is not about the intellect. I was much smarter before I came here. But this program, if anything, has dumbed me up a lot. Got rid of a lot of old ideas. I barely have an idea left in my head, and which is not a bad deal, because when you get rid of all those ideas, you don't have to think. And I don't know, has anybody been thinking lately? I don't know. It never worked for me, you know. I used to think a lot about a lot of things. There were always bad thoughts about myself and other people. And I mean, the only time you really have to think hard is if you're trying to control other people or manage your life. And you ever try that control other people manage your life thing? You know, they refuse to behave. You know what I mean? They just won't listen. They don't understand. So I pretty much tried to quit that deal. You know, I'm not perfect at it. So in any event, but there is something about, you know, I discovered I was an alcoholic in the sense that when I've always been an alcoholic in the spiritual emotional sense, because you know, after you get in here, you learn that drinking is really just a symptom of the disease. I mean, I go to thousands of AA meetings in the last 32 years. Nobody's drinking. Nobody even has a drinking problem. You know, I mean, nobody who's AA has a drinking problem. They pretty much get rid of that, or they don't. But I've watched what has gone on in here, and it's an interesting deal, what's happened to me. I try to think back. The one thing about having... Do you recall, would I be correct in assuming that you did not have like a drink and got drunk and then said, I got to go to Alcoholics Anonymous? Did that happen to you? You had like a bad Saturday night, you know, the first time you drank and you said, well, I must be an alcoholic, I better go to AA. So if you're like me, what happened was you drank over maybe 5, 10, 15 years, 20 years. You hurt a lot of people. You somehow, you know, maybe you lost a wife or a husband. Maybe you lost a job. Maybe you lost your self-esteem. And that was just the starting of your drinking, you know what I mean? You know, that's just barely a speed bump. And then you just kept on going, you know, at about 50 miles per hour. And then finally, about the time when you crashed and burned, if you were lucky, you said you think you might have a drinking problem. And you wound up in Alcoholics Anonymous, only discovered that you're an alcoholic, you know. And so what I'm saying is that process takes place over a period of time. It's like a learning. It doesn't matter how smart you are. As a matter of fact, how many people I've sponsored a lot of people. How many people have actually worked with alcoholics? Yeah, have you noticed that the smarter they are, the harder they are to work with? Because first of all, they're smarter than you. They rationalize, like I rationalize. I tell myself rational lies. I mean, I've never given an excuse for bad actions or missing a meeting where I didn't have a good excuse. I've never hated somebody who didn't deserve to be hated. I've never resented somebody that didn't deserve to be resented. I've never been angry when it wasn't appropriate to be angry. I mean, as a matter of fact, my way of thinking is my life, which seems the only normal life, my way of thinking is perfectly okay. You know, this changing thing, I don't know if it should change because there's nothing wrong with me, except for the drinking thing, and I'll admit that, you know. And so what happens, what it seems to me happens is we don't get this thing sort of intellectually. Pain is really the touchstone of this deal. But not just pain, because, you know, I went through a lot of pain. I mean sustained, horrible, ego-puncturing pain over a period of years, you know? And then you finally figure out that you've got the symptom. You understand? The symptom. You don't even know what the disease is. You know you got the symptom. And then you mosey on in here. You say, I'm an alcoholic, you know? So time does mean something. In other words, suffering, there's a value in suffering. The value in suffering for alcohol, it says, how do we get a new perspective? The 12 and 12 says, you may think you get a new perspective. Here's what you, if you're an alcoholic like me, I went to college, I went to law school. I think you impress people and get ahead of the world by studying, you know, because of my brain, because I'm so smart. And what the big book says is you don't get a new perspective by studying. You get a new perspective by 1,000 forms of basically pain. You know, that's how we get, by the final crushing of ourselves, you get crushed. That's how you get a new, by suffering over a period of time. That's how you get a new perspective. And you know, the big book says, you know, men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. You know, about you, that's why I drank. I drank for the effect. I didn't realize that, you know, but I mean, it's true. You know, they're restless, irritable, discontented. You can add whatever, you know, feeling sorry for yourself, whatever you want to add to that. Unless they can again experience sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. That's why I drank, because no woman, no amount of money, no suit of clothes, no car, although those all worked, none of them worked quite as well as just a few drinks. And so I drank it. And if alcohol did for you what it did for me, you'd drink it too. Of course, the problem with my life is alcohol stopped working for me, and the real sad news is it stopped working for me about 10 years before I even realized it stopped working for me. And I hurt a lot of people, and that's, you know, that's the deal. So time means something. Because after I got rid of the booze, you know, sometimes, at least for me, after I got rid of the booze, things got better. They get better sometimes for some people because you stop having problems that you used to have that are related to drinking alcohol, like DUIs and a lot of other things. And maybe you wake up one day and you see you have cash left, you know, on the draw, something like that. You start having those problems. But what you ultimately learn down the road, like I sponsored a guy, he's still sober today, he's got 30 years. He got sober, and he had about 2 weeks or 3 weeks or something, and he was driving in his car, and he loved Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was, he started thinking. You know, sometimes when you're not drinking, what happens is, you know, the great thing about drinking is like you can escape from yourself. You can like take a little vacation. It's like committing suicide, but you're still breathing. You know what I mean? Like, that's why sometimes alcoholics, when they stop drinking, they think a lot about killing themselves. You know, I mean, they just think a lot about killing themselves because, you know, I can't drink. I used to commit suicide. Dr. Menninger in Man Against Himself said, alcoholics, written in I think it was before, right before the big book, said alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. Because we hate ourselves, and we hate our lives, and we hate everything about everything. We just are, you know. I heard somebody say this, and I loved it because it was so true. It was like whatever insulation the Lord gives men and women so they can withstand the bullshit, the traffic, the people, the bosses, whatever insulation he gives you, you know, I didn't get it. I was going down that assembly line up there in heaven, you know what I mean? And it went right when it came to me, somebody said, "Hey, God," and he looked up, and I went right by, and that was it. Screwed from the start, you know what I mean? Missed that insulation, you know? And so I came down here, and as I said to my sponsor, I said, I'm sensitive. He says, "No, great artist is sensitive. You're just touchy." So whether you want to call it touchy, or whether you want to call it self-centered, or whether you want to call it a self-pityaholic, I'm selfish, self-centered, 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. I step on the toes of others, they retaliate. And usually I don't think I have any problem. I'm self-will run riot, though. I usually don't think so. And that's a problem. It takes me 15 years to figure out that I have an alcohol problem. When they start telling me I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, I don't even know what they're talking about. What do you mean self? I'm the nicest guy I know. I am the greatest guy. I love people. I'm like a nice guy, you know. How many years does it take to realize what a pig you are? I'm not talking about you. When I say what a pig you are, I'm talking about me. You understand what I'm saying? I can tell by this room you guys are sort of like a cut above. You're like good alcoholics, you know, nice alcoholics. You never hurt anybody in your life, you know. You're like saintly alcoholics. But I was like a hypocrite alcoholic. I was like a betrayer. Anybody here ever been betrayed? I was a betrayer alcoholic. You know, I was a lying alcoholic. I was a betrayer, a lying, a selfish, a conniving, an evil alcoholic, you know, with a law degree. And, of course, I didn't think so. I thought I was a nice guy. So how many years do you have to go? I went about 15 years before I realized I might have a drinking problem. How many years do you have to go before you realize you have a problem in all those other areas? Another 15 years, another 20? I mean, in a sense, sort of like sobriety works against you, doesn't it? Because you get sober and they start handing you medallions, they start clapping for you, you start doing better at the job. And it's actually easier, since you're melding into life, it's easier to think that you're okay now. How do you learn that you're really still a hypocritical, selfish, self-centered idiot when you're presumably, by life standards, doing okay? That's got to be a little harder. I guess you got to get a hold of one of these sponsors that hurt your feelings or stuff like that. But who wants one of those, you know what I mean? Why don't you get a sponsor who's like a friend, you know what I mean, and makes you feel good all the time, stuff like that. It's a difficult thing. Alcoholics generally try to run away from pain and things of that sort. So in any event, I came in here. You know, now, before I came in here, I was confused. I mean, as I look, so one of the things about having 32 years, not that I'm bragging, is you get to go through 32 years of stuff. You know what's that terminology they said there? You know, blank happens. You know what I mean? It happens. You know, crap happens. It happens, right? It doesn't matter. You know, I used to get into trouble because of the consequences of the things I did. But stuff is happening to you out there, even if you don't do anything wrong. Like traffic's happening, taxes are happening, the light bill is happening. You know, people are happening. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that gets your attention that can hurt your feeling and betray you and scare you and everything that's out there. It's like a big world and it's messy and it's horrible. And let me tell you something, they're not listening to you. Have you noticed that? It ain't listening to you. It doesn't care what you think. Nobody cares what you think. Okay, it's just going the way it's going, you know? And, you know, the doctor says to you, you know, you have cancer. He doesn't care that you've been going to AA meetings. The doctor, you know, you have a son or a daughter who dies. Like a friend of mine had a 17-year-old, his only son died of a, you know, brain cancer. It doesn't care that you're a Christian. You understand? There's stuff going on out there, right? Serious stuff is going on out there, you know? And, you know, I used to drink. I used to drink even when things were going well. I'd feel bad. I had bad thoughts about myself and other people. Imagine how it's going for me out there without my bottle, without that deal, you know? That's it. I mean, you know, the meetings can only work so long. The sponsorship can only work so long. You know, I mean, you know, let me tell you something. At 3 o'clock in the morning in my house, there ain't no meeting going on. There ain't no sponsor there. I'm alone with my thoughts. You know, I mean, there's a lot of times you're alone with your thoughts. You know, the meetings can kind of get you through, can do certain things for you. They're tools, you know, and that's what. There's something else. I got to latch on. Something else has to happen. So what 32 years is you know, you live life for 32 years in this program. That's 32 years of not only working the program, sometimes good, sometimes bad, but it's working the program through bounce checks, through crazy people, through all sorts of stuff that's going on. And somehow over that period of time, not because I'm smart, basically the truth is because life and living life has brought these things to my attention. Like God and life will bring things to your attention, or else you're going to be a sorry sucker. You're going to just keep on doing the same thing over and over again, expecting, you know, that's how I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Life chose to bring to my attention that I had a drinking problem. I mean, it was like brought to my attention, you know? So what happens is sometimes, you know, being self-centered is brought to your attention. Things are just brought to your attention over a period of time. Hey, if you have a sponsor, it's even better. If you're in AA, the chances are it'll be even better brought to your attention, because you may be at a meeting and somebody whose attention was already brought to might be telling their story or giving their testimony, and you might say, man, that's what happened to me. That's what happened to me. And all of a sudden you have an epiphany. You say, man, that's my problem. Or if you're with a sponsor, you go up to a sponsor and you start complaining about somebody else, because if you're an alcoholic, you're hair triggered to blame. So you start, he did this and she did that and he did this and she did that. And if only, I'm an if only, or I'm a yes butter. And maybe you have one of these sponsors that cares so much about you, he's willing to hurt you. And he says, why don't you grow up? Why don't you grow up? You know, you're the problem. And all of a sudden you hurt your feelings, you get all upset and everything like that. And, you know, but you think about it, because you don't want to drink. And you like this sponsor, and you know he loves you. And all of a sudden it occurs to you, man, he's right. And all of a sudden you have an epiphany and you grow a little bit. And you learn a little. I mean, this stuff takes place over a period. This stuff is tough. I mean, we have this hard shell. You know, they say alcoholics, the chief characteristic is defiant. We are stubborn. We are defiant. We're in denial all the time about a whole lot of things, you know. And I mean, that's what I was. And here I was. And when I look back at my life, so one of the things about the 32-year thing is I have a certain perspective. And plus you get to sponsor people and watch people and see how people fall and what happens. So I look back at my life and I realize that I was confused. I was confused throughout life. I don't know. This way of life, this AA way of life, you know, with principles and with sponsors and with God and a relationship with him and how we do things and how we think and how we're told to do things, not on our own, but with the help of other people and mentors. This way of life is so much better than the way I did it before. I have no idea how I made it. I was like playing a game. I was living by, you know, I was flying by the seat of my pants, you know? I was just trying to get by day after day and not get killed. And I was just trying to win. Every day was the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat, you know? Anybody, it was a long time. Everybody watched ABC Wild World of Sports, where, you know, the thrill of victory, that where the guy would go off the ski slope and throw. That was my life every day. Every day it was like drama. Drama. And here's the cool part. Every day was drama, craziness, people coming at me, things hurting me, stuff going on, crazy stuff, you know, dramatic stuff. And I thought I was in control. I thought I knew what I was doing. You know what I mean? And the smarter I thought I was, and the weller I thought I was, and the more I tried to control, the more things got out of control. And I hung around with other people that were out of control. And then I finally spin out of control and I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the truth is, the honest truth is, after I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and finally realized that I had a problem and realized that my best thinking, with the help of my sponsor, he helped me realize this, because he would tell me this. He'd say, Rush, your best thinking got you into this thing. He, in every possible way you could possibly do it, either in AA groups or with this sponsor, with mentors, they somehow, with every possible cliche, got the point across to me that I was crazy and my best thing that got me into this thing. And the smarter I thought I was, the more I thought, you know, the grouch and the brainstorm is not for us, that I better just let other people do the thinking for me. You know, it's one thing to stop drinking, to stop thinking, to put your thinking on hold when you're so right and you're so smart and people so don't understand you, you know, and you're so unique, you know. That's a whole other thing. And here's the interesting thing. Now I look back on it, and it wasn't that I was a bad AA. You know, I went to a lot of meetings. You know, I did the steps. I did the whole thing. I did it by the numbers, you know what I mean? And I wanted this thing, you know. But as I look back on it, I was probably confused for a good 15 to 20 years. Sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, when I say confused, that I'm not saying I wasn't sober. I'm not saying it wasn't decent sobriety. I mean, it was like, you know, it's sort of like in here, the best way I can liken it to is, it's like if you have I have grandkids. So I have a 5-year-old grandchild, and beautiful, beautiful grandchild, 5 years old, and you know what she acts like? She acts like a 5-year-old. And I got a 9-year-old grandchild, and you know what she acts like? She acts like a 9-year-old. You know, I know some 15-year-olds. You know what they act like? They act like 15-year-olds. And you want to know something? They're all confused. They have no idea what's going on. And I've got some men in my life that I follow. Because I've always followed men. I think I talk about, I've always been following somebody in front of me. I always follow men. I always want to have somebody in front of me I'm following. And I have some men in my life, I'm 64, who are 84, who are 20 years older than me. And the men in my life that I hang out with are mostly pastors and things like that. And they're not out of control. They're of a different nature. There's a different deal going on with them. And it's noticeable. You know, that's why I guess they have that thing. The thing, if you want what we have, and you're willing to go to any length together, then I've always had a we in my life. I've always had a group of men or a man. You know, sometimes for me, it's mostly men who had something I wanted, and they were farther along that I followed. So time does mean something. Something happened. There is a maturation process going on in here, and people change, and these promises get stronger and stronger and stronger. This stuff they talk about when we get to the 11th step about the inspirational thinking, it seems kind of weird at first, but we come to rely upon it. The things they talk about in here, you're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. You know, we've experienced much of heaven, and you'll be rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. These things that seem like impossible or outrageous or it can't happen become like everyday life. Because even the first 15 years or 20 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, I still remember going to meetings. You know, I sponsor a lot of people today. I go to meetings. And a lot of meetings, I hear people, and I'm not putting this down. I'm just telling you, you've heard it, you know, the meetings are sort of like this. Reporting what's going on. And then this happened. And then that happened. Then my boss did this. And my mother did that. It's all about the drama that's going on in your life right now. And I went to I'd go to a lot of meetings for the first 10 or 15 years. And it seems to me there was a lot of meetings I went to because I had to go to a meeting because I had some drama going on in my life. And I had to report the drama to my sponsor, to the people in the meeting. There's nothing wrong with that. It was helpful. It helped me survive. I used to say, I'm 10 years sober. When is the drama going to stop? I mean, it wasn't as bad as when I was 2 years sober or when I was 2 days sober. But now I'm 15 years sober, you know, and I tell some guy, listen, I don't know, some guy who's like got 2 hours, I'd say, and he has all sorts of problems. I'd say to him, listen, I don't know what to tell you, let me tell you this, buddy. You don't drink and go to meetings. You put the plug in the drug, and you don't drink and go to meetings one day at a time. You get a sponsor, and it's all going to work out. It's going to be wonderful. I can't tell you how it's going to work out, but it's all going to work out. And I believe that to be true, and I know it to be true. And I'm sincere when I say that. And he says, you really mean it? I says, absolutely. It's going to work out for you, and it's going to be great. And he says, thanks a lot. And then I get in my car, and I drive away, and I say, Russ, when's it going to work out for you? You've been going to AA for 15 years. And you know, I've been going to AA for 15 years. You're still a banana. You know what I'm talking about? You're still going, you know? And I would see these guys in front of me, you know, guys like, you know, Ray O'Keefe or Joe Snyder or Bob Sullivan or, you know, some of the guys that would be in front of me, and they'd, you know, be much older than me and everything. I'd say, man, why can't I be like them? Why can't I have what they have? What do they got going? Because I was going to AA meetings, and I was sober, and they were sober, but like it says in the big book, like it says in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, like Bill Dodson says, I knew there was something more, something I hadn't got. So, you know, I would gravitate to these guys because I knew there was something more. I knew there was something I hadn't got. I knew even at 10, 15 years, I despaired of thinking I would never get it, that it would never happen to me, that it was always going to be at 20, 30, 40 years, it was always going to be one day at a time, fighting the fight, you know, battling the bastards out there, you know, going through all the crap that we go through, that I was never going to be. You know, that for me it was going to be I'd have an hour here, 2 hours there, maybe a day, and then the bullshit would happen again. You know what I mean? And I'd have to fight it again, and this would happen, or that would happen. And, you know, never did I think it would be as good as it is right now. And it has nothing to do with circumstances. It has nothing to do with whether you have cancer or not, or whether you're sick or not, or, you know, whatever it is. It has to do with what's going on inside of me. You know, and I hope I have time. You know, maybe I will to talk a bit about that. But things change over a period of time. I want to let you know. And I used to watch guys with like 20, 30 years, and I'd have like 3 years. And I of course want what they'd have. Like I wanted like now. You know, you got 5 years, and you want to be. You know, listen, 5-year-olds don't turn into 20-year-olds just because they're hanging around with 20-year-olds. I mean, it may be helpful. I mean, you got to put in your time. You know, in the book of James, as you all know, Alcoholics Anonymous during the first 4 years. If you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, the 3 books that they found absolutely essential was 1 Corinthians 13, the Sermon on the Mount, and the book of James. The first AA meeting was Sermon on the Mount. Was Bob Smith reading Sermon on the Mount? And the book of James. In the book of James, the first chapter says, he says, rejoice. Rejoice. Get excited when you're having the crap beat out of you, when you're going through trials. Because when you go through trials and you believe in God, you know, and you persevere through them, he says it builds up your faith and it makes you mature. And that's what happens in here. You know, you see some guy who seems to have something that you want, and he seems to be calm in the face of craziness, and it seems like his life, he's just some guy that has grown closer and closer to a relationship with God, and he doesn't rely anymore on himself. He doesn't rely anymore on his mother or his father or his wife or all those. What's the use of complaining about how other people let you down? The only time you complain about how other people let you down is when you're dependent upon other people. And they'll always let you down. You know, Bill Wilson said the next frontier is an emotional sobriety. He says the real nature of the alcoholic is that we have unhealthy dependencies. Unhealthy dependencies could be anything. It could be TV. It could be other people. It could be a man. It could be a woman. It could be anything you depend on other than God, or anything that can rust, or people can take, anything the government can take away from you. It could be anything that you could lose that you don't have permanently. And nobody can take away your relationship with God. You can go to jail and have your relationship with God. That's why people are astounded by people of faith. And that's what this program is all about. This program is all about developing faith in God, and that's how we get to the 11th step, and then making it stronger. It's all about that. That's the one thing. That's the only answer in this program. Everything. People don't stay sober because of the steps. They don't stay sober because of sponsors. They don't stay sober because of the rooms. They don't stay sober because of any of this stuff. Because I've seen a gazillion of them drink, and everyone that I've seen that has drank has had a sponsor. And they've all gone to meetings. And they've all worked the steps one way or the other. And they've all read the books and the material, and that does not save them. And the ones that don't drink, and when you read this thing about the Gresham's Law, you'll find that there's an AA in here. There's a form of AA in here where people come into this room, and they don't do what some of the old-timers did, but they do maybe like a milder or weaker variety of it. Maybe it has to go with going to meetings. And they stay sober anyway. They pick up their 20-year medallions. They pick up their 30-year medallions. But you want something, they don't get the stuff you're reading in this book. You know, when you read this book, I don't know how many people have actually read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're not talking about drinking most of the time. They're talking about things like, they're using words that are really strange words. And I don't think they're lying. I know they're not lying. I can tell you right now, I know they're not lying. They say things like, and I've said it before, like, we've experienced much of heaven. and we've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, which you had not even dreamed. Let me tell you something. I've been around LA a long time. Thousands of people gone to thousands of meetings to see a lot of people they don't drink. Very, very, very few would even suggest that they're being rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, and they wouldn't even use those words. They wouldn't say that. They wouldn't say they're experiencing the promises full time, every day, all the time. That they're experiencing the joy of living all the time. You know, the most they'd say is, I'm not drinking. You get a lot of this, hanging in there. Hanging in there. I'm hanging in there. You know, that's great. 14 years of this stuff. Hang in there, you know. So, before I get into the real good stuff, I just want to tell you a couple of things about my life. Which I think has something to do with the ninth step. You know, the ninth step is the promise steps. It's really the promises steps, which is really what I want to sort of talk about, those promises. But I was married to a young gal, wonderful, a very nice gal, wonderful gal. And I don't know whether men and women have different ideas about marriage. I think it was, like, important to her. I don't know how important marriage is to men. I really don't. I'm a man. I only know the way I think. It's a nice thing to have a wife and things like that. It's nice to have a wife now. I love my wife. She's a good gal and everything like that. Maybe women think about marriage or stuff differently. I don't know. But I had a wife, and I had a wonderful child, and had a house, and, you know, I did that stuff. And one day she said to me, after we've been married for 5 years, and the beautiful, wonderful in-laws, and one day she said to me, if you heard the story, well, you can hear it again. She says to me on a Friday morning, she said, and I was, I don't know, 24, 25, 26, 27, something like that. She said, I just want you to know, if you come home drunk one time, I'm leaving you. I have no idea where that came from, you know, out of the blue, you know. And she said it to me like she was like delivering mail, you know what I mean? And she wasn't starting a fight. She said, I just want you to know. She was just sick and tired of cooking dinner for me. She had this idea. I was an attorney, and she had this idea that that after work I should come home. And, no, don't get me wrong, I would make it home, but like at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know what I mean? And she was doing things, like, now I wasn't screwing around with women or anything, I was just thinking about it a lot, you know? And, sure, you're laughing, you don't know what it's like, but in any event, you know, so I was cheating, but I was not cheating because I was too much of a coward to cheat. But you know, when you're unavailable for your wife or your husband or something, like, it's like cheating. It's the same thing. You're crushing their heart. But, you know, I didn't know that then. I thought I was a good guy. But in any event, so she apparently had enough of cooking dinner and waiting at home. And, you know, she'd get the phone calls. I'd give her a phone call every once in a while. I mean, it'd be 5 o'clock, and I'd be drinking between 5 and 6, and around 6 o'clock I'd call him and say, honey, I'm at the bar with Fred. We're just discussing a few things. I'll be home in a half an hour. And then she'd get the phone call at like 8 o'clock saying, oh, something came up, and Joe came in, but I'll be home in a half an hour. She'd get the phone call, and then the phone calls would stop, and I'd get in at 2 o'clock. And, you know, that was pretty much my routine. And, of course, I'm not really worried about her because I don't think a lot about other people. I don't know what form of alcoholism you have, but I have a form of alcoholism where I don't really think a lot about other people. You know? Because they're other people, they're not me. You know what I mean? What do I need to be thinking about them for, you know? They're not important. So in any event, but I'm a nice guy. You understand what I'm saying? I'm a good guy. I never hurt anybody, you know, intentionally, but I mean, I don't really pay attention to other people and what's going on with them. That's their problem. But in any event, so she said, you come home drunk one time, I'm leaving you. And I was taken aback, and then she left, and I got in my car, and I drove like 2 blocks. This is a true story. I drove 2 blocks, and, it's a simple statement. You come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I drive 2 blocks, you get to a red light, I say, what the hell does she mean by that, you know? And because when you're an alcoholic, and your alcoholic thinking seems the only normal way, and you want to do something, it can be a red light, it can be a big neon sign. You have, you know, whenever you, an alcohol, one of the deals about being an alcoholic is whenever you're told anything, you hear anything, or you read anything that you don't like, it confuses you. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how simple it, it either confuses you or you get you or it gets you mad. You're told the truth. You know the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. It's a, you know what does Jack Nicholson say? The truth, you can't handle the truth. Alcoholics can't handle the truth if they're actively alcoholic. Now alcoholics in AA that are thirsty for the truth. You know what I mean? They love the truth. They love the truth. You know what I mean? I was speaking to the Little River Club the other day, and I sometimes I get a little crazy. You might have noticed that, but in Little River, I really get crazy, and I start yelling and screaming at them. I get crazy. I do stupid things. I do crazy things. You know, I admit it. I get stuff on me. I start yelling, screaming stuff at them, you know. They started clapping because, and I was talking to a friend of mine. I said, why are they screaming? I'm telling them they're sick, they're stupid, they're crazy, they don't deserve to live, you know. And they're clapping. They're loving. And a pastor friend of mine who was like a revival, you know what he said to me? He said, you know, Russell, he said, when you're talking the truth, people love it, even if it hurts. They're so starved for the truth. They love it, even if it hurts. And or even if it makes them insane, because people are so looking to be unconfused and looking for a beacon, looking for the truth, you know? And all you were doing is you were talking about yourself and expressing what this disease is all about. And this disease is ugly. It's not cute. It's ugly. A lot of people get hurt. You know, we think a lot about ourselves. A lot of people get hurt. So in any event, I left, you know, so I left and I stopped in the bar that night for one drink. We've been married 5 years, yet one drink. And you know what the story is. I ended up having another drink, and I ended up coming home at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and that was the end of my marriage. And she tried to get it back together again, and you know, and I was, as I hit the street, I'm saying I'm free. And if you had asked me why I was leaving her, I'd say, well, she did not, you know, because I'm a blamer, and the way I saw it is that I'm a good guy, and she just doesn't understand me. And she's trying to restrict me, and we're growing in different directions. This marriage was a mistake. So I leave her with a child to raise, and I take out off to do what I really wanted to do, and that is, you know, have sexual intercourse with every woman in the world. You know, and that plan, by the way, did not work out at all. At all, you know. So in any event, yeah, I was going to be the Hugh Hefner, you know, of Miami, you know. Didn't work out. Well, in any event, yeah, I love the way you guys laugh. Like, forget it. So, in any event,
what does he mean by that?
What does he mean by that? Yeah, I know, Richard. I'm puzzled by that. So I left her. You know, I left her. Now I left that girl. Now, I want to tell you my story. And then I did this, and I did this. I want to go on with my story. I'm going to tell you a little more about my story. What about her story? You know what I did? I ended up paying child support. I paid my child support most of the time on time. So we don't have to talk about her anymore. She's just a human being. She's just, you know what she is? She's just something left in my wake with a child alone who thought she was going to stay married to a man who was a decent person all her life, who had friends and everything, and now she found herself a single mother. What about her? But I don't really talk about her. Hey, that's her problem. That's her story. I want to tell you about my story. Let me tell you how I got wonderful. You know what I mean? But let me tell you something. She has a story. There's a story going on there. But the great thing about not talking about her story, and I can just talk to you about my story, is then we can forget about her. It's like she doesn't count. Let's forget about her story. Let's just talk about me, and I'll tell you how great I am. What a great AA-er I am, okay? But you see, you know, here's the deal. 3 years later, I'm drinking, I'm doing my thing, and I'm doing my plan, you know, the sexual intercourse with every girl in the United States of America. And I'm deeply involved in that plan, which isn't going well. But, you know, I'm doing my best, I'm trying, you know. And so here's what happens. I go out with this gal named Sally, and on a Friday night, and Saturday morning I wake up, and I was supposed to take my son, who's like around 6 or 7 years old, to the zoo. Because I've been telling him I'm going to take him to the zoo, okay? He said, you're going to take me? He says, absolutely, I'm picking up a tent, I'm taking you to the zoo. And Sally calls me up and says, you know, the girls and I are going out in a boat. Would you like to come with us? Well, you know, this is, man, you know, which sort of like fits into my plan, if you understand what I'm saying. Because my son really didn't fit into the overall major plan, you know what I mean? And So what happens is, do you think that's possible that people come to Alcoholics Anonymous and they have a plan like that? Like, if I only find sex, I'll be okay. Or if I can only, you know, get a car, get money, I'll be okay. You know, I forget this God stuff and everything. You think people have plans like that in AA? When can I get a husband? When can I get a wife? When can I get, you know, this? When can I get that? And sort of think they're good people. And they're doing good stuff. And they're doing good, and they're performing God's work. I don't know. I don't know. It's just something to think about. But in any event, so I'm sitting there. She's saying, you want to go out on the boat with me and the girls? So I'm thinking, well, I'm supposed to pick up my son. And I'm and the girls, my son, the girl. I mean, I have this tug of war. Because I've been telling my son I'm going to... So I think about that, and I agonize over it for about, you know, I don't know, about 15 seconds. And then it was like anchors away. But it was like... I didn't call him. I didn't call... You know, I made that decision sober. I'd love to say that alcohol caused me to hurt people. And alcohol, I'd love to blame everything on alcohol. But most people I hurt in my life, I did a cold stone sober. As a matter of fact, most of the people I hurt in my life today, even... Sober enough, I do it sober the same way, usually by betraying them or not living up to the what I'm supposed to live up to, or a lack of integrity, or being selfish or something like that. You know, when I was drunk, I just fell down drunk, but most of the people I hurt and got angry at and I did bad things to, I did it sober, with sober thinking. Thinking that I was doing, I'm my best friend, thinking I'm doing the exact righteous best thing. And so I just went off on the boat. Now, you know, with, you know, and drank, because when you live a life like that, you got to drink. You know what I mean? And, you know, when you live, and you know, I just told you two stories, which are, and I never called him. He just sat there, I suppose, looking for his dad. Now I just told you two stories that I remember. I don't even know why I remember them, but they're two stories I remember. But you know what? If you see a pattern there of being a liar, a betrayer, being self-centered, those aren't like, I was like Pope John all the time, and those are two unusual stories. I've told you two stories which pretty much tell you what I was for many, many years. Those pretty much illustrate me. So I come into Alcoholics, so let me ask you something. What right do I have to feel good about myself or anything? I mean, just because I stop drinking and go to Alcoholics Anonymous... and, you know, say, hi, Bob, or something like that, what right do I have to feel like a decent human being at all? I used to say to my sponsor, you know, I feel guilty. He says, probably because you are. You know? Is it any wonder that, you know, I'd be in the shower and lathering up, and is it any wonder that I was a self-condemner? Alcoholics do that, don't they? They say things to themselves out of blue, like, you're an asshole, you're an idiot, you're stupid. You don't deserve to live, you know. They get so they talk to themselves in crappy ways. You know, you think that affects your relationship with other people? I couldn't even look people in the eyes. You know, I could dress up. I mean, that affects, you know, with, why do you think alcoholics worry so much about what other people think about them? Because when you think you're a piece of crap, you know, I was a nothing. I was always going to be a nothing. I didn't deserve to be anything but a nothing. I used to put something on my body that turned me into an almost. When you're nothing, almost is top of the world. You know, so what does it matter if you have money or you dress yourself up or anything if you think you're a piece, if your reputation with yourself is that you're a piece of crap? So how do you fix that? I know how to stop drinking. How do you stop thinking? How do you stop those bad thoughts about yourself and other people? How do you stop comparing your insides with other people's outsides? You know, how do you stop that crap that's going on in your brain? How do you get rid of that deal? Like a lobotomy or something like that? And what am I going to do? I'm going to go up to my former wife, say I'm sorry. Hey, listen, I'm sorry. I got that one nailed. If you're an alcoholic, you got I'm sorry nailed. My whole life was I'm sorry. I'm sorry. But I'm sorry for me is not I'm sorry. It's not like I'm sorry. It's like let me off the hook. This is the way it works. I say I'm sorry. And then you say I'm sorry I shot your dog and burned down your house. And then you say, oh, forget about it, it was nothing. And then I feel better. You know what I mean? That's the way it's supposed to work. I'm sorry is my payment for your letting me off the hook, so I don't have to worry about it anymore. I know that's true because if I say I'm sorry to you, if I deem to say I'm sorry to you and you even look funny at me, I go, what's the problem? I said I was sorry. You got to understand, I am God, you are just... a human being. You're not like me, you know? But meanwhile, if somebody hurts my feeling, real or imagined, that's good for 15 meetings, you know, sucking my thumb, you know? Other, you know? Right? So, but how do you do that? How do you go up to a wife, and how do you go up to a child? How do you do that? Well, I didn't get through all this stuff. I got too much time. But in any event, you know, one of the eight things it says in the eighth step is it says one of the great lines it says in the eighth step. I'm gonna finish off with. I want to say one of these lines. It says in the eighth step, like it says in every single step. Every single step, it says the same stuff. Before step five, it says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and discover the obstacles in our path. There he is, the Creator is. The Creator, God. See to what your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. See, it's all about him. You know what it says in the eighth step? Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be a maximum service to God and the people about us. You know, it's all about God. This whole book is about God. The whole thing's about God. And you know, what happens is, you could say, I'm sorry until the cows come home. You know, you could say, I apologize until the cows come home. There is a major difference. And I can only tell you this as somebody who's lived this program for 32 years. I can't even explain it to you. You're either going to figure it out. There is a major difference between saying you're sorry or apologizing and being repentant. Repentant to God because you let him down. And the only way you can be repentant to God because you let him down is you got to believe in him. You got to have some sort of faith, modicum of faith. You got to have that thing going that Bill Wilson had when he said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, you know, curing me of this terrible disease, that I got to keep talking about it and telling other people. Because when you have that relationship going on, you know the relationship they talk about in the book, where they say burn that idea of the relationship into every man's mind. Let no man say that he needs to have his wife back. Wife or no wife, job or no wife, you know. What does it say? Your sprite depends upon the relationship with God. He's going to show you how to create the fellowship you crave. We know but a little. You know, God will show you, you know, your real reliance has to be on him. There's a big difference when God goes before you, or you perform, you know, what does it say? What does it say in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? It says, if we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all powerful, he gives us everything we need if we stay close to him and perform his works well. You know, we all think, you know, there's two ways of doing this thing. You can do this thing like it's a self-help program. You're doing it to make yourself better, to puff yourself up. You know, because you could speak at meetings or do something, that sort of stuff. And that's going to get you a certain amount of results just by hanging around here. Or you can do it because that's what God wants you to do. You know, that's the separation between the men and the boys in the sixth step. We talk about that. There's a separation. The boys, the men are the ones who are trying to grow in the image and likeness of their Creator and do this stuff because he knows that's what God wants them to be. Because they're doing it because they're focusing on God. They want to go further. You know, there's a big difference when you do this thing in partnership with him. You know, and I want to end, we're just going a little bit, I just want to, and I'll go into this more later on when we talk about the 10th step, actually. I was talking about this thing about battling the world. I don't know how many people are involved in battling the world. About what I have noticed about myself, I'm not sure when it happened. I can't tell you when it happened because I didn't really have much to do with it. When I stopped battling the world, when I stopped with the drama, when the drama stopped, okay? And I'm not saying it's perfectly stopped. I have my moments, I have my days. But I mean, when it really went from going to meetings because I had to go to meetings, or, you know, call my sponsor because I had to call my sponsor, or always having some sort of dramatic event to report, into a more sort of like flowing, easy does it sort of thing. But what I have found, there's a, if anybody ever reads the Psalms, there's a great psalm called Psalm, it's the first psalm, Psalm 1. What I have found is the more you focus on God, whatever you do to focus on him, in this big book, I'll tell you one thing, if you read this big book, if you seriously read this big book, if you read Dr. Bob and the good old timers, you're going to find that they focused on only one thing. You know, I don't know if you know this, for the first 4 years of Alcoholics Anonymous, they weren't reading the big book. Big book was published 4 years. I don't know whether you know this. They didn't have the 12 steps for the first 4 years. You know, those guys who said, we've been rocking in the fourth dimension. If you want what we have, you know, and all the guys who were getting the promises, they didn't get that from working the 12 steps. They worked the 12 steps. They weren't called the 12 steps. You know, 12 steps were basically codified, but they were working something. But the program they were working has been going around for like 8,000 years. They're working a program, believe me, but the program they're working has been working for thousands of years. Bill Wilson didn't discover anything except a different way of packaging something, so Americans, you know, would cuddle up more to it. But, you know, I mean, they were working something, and what I found in my life is the more I focus on him and the more I pay attention to him and try to do the things he wants me to do, you just change faster. There's a power in here. There's a power, the power of God. You know, what does it say in the promises? When it talks about all this stuff, you're going to lose fear of people, fear of economic insecurity. No matter how far down you're going to go, you're going to see, you're going to have a new freedom, you're going to have a new habit. What's the last thing it says? We see that God is doing for us what we could not do for himself. Isn't that what it says? It says we see that God is doing for us what we cannot do for himself. Well, let me tell you something. He ain't going to do it for you unless you partner up with him. He's not going to do it for you while you deny it, while you're denying him, while you're not thinking about him, while you're not focusing on him. You know, you try to do this thing without focusing on him, you see how that works out for you. You could be one of the many people that either drink or stay sober, but you're dry and brittle. You know? So that's the deal, and next week we'll talk about step 10. Thank you very much.